Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sin Zen Lefko.
All right. Dude,
can we have a video of that on Instagram, everybody?
Oh, my God.
I'm opening up this damn show because Lefko can't talk because he just had the computer smashed up to his face.
Sims and Lefko live in the San Jose International Airport outside the legendary Access Point.
Special bar. Thank you to the Access Point for hosting us today. This was very nice of them to open
incredible.
Up the doors for
pretty
us.
Pretty awesome. And we had quite the fanfare here to start off.
It's kind of our first live show. A few people looked at Chris and went, hey, did you play for the Titans? Yes. Were you on the Levitard show? A lot of good little moments there.
A lot of good little moments.
We're here in an airport.
We're here in an airport. This is something I thought I'd never do. Check it off the list.
People, and we're also right in front of a bathroom, and people are coming out of the bathroom, taking photos, and then putting their head down as if like they didn't actually do it.
Yeah, right.
And I don't think they know who they are, who we are.
Oh, I don't think
they're
so
they're just
either.
Like, whatever they are, I need a
I'm
photo.
I'm going to show this picture to somebody I know and see if they know who they
exactly,
are.
Exactly.
What does that mean you thought you'd never do this? Thought you'd never tape a podcast in an airport?
No, I did not.
Wow.
You have a problem?
You really did not have the right expectations going into this.
I guess I did not.
We are in the midst of a training camp tour across California. We were in San Francisco. We hung out with some 49ers.
Yep.
Then we're going down to L.A. to hang out with some Chargers, maybe some Rams. But we had you were supposed to be on my flight here. And missed it.
Yeah, I missed it. I mean, talk about the worst day ever getting out of here. what was that, Tuesday? I do the PFT show in the morning.
Yes.
I then say I'm going to go home, okay, for 20 minutes before the car picks me up. I do that. I'm on my way to JFK. You know there was a little traffic jam construction on the road. But before, I must have had an accident. I missed my flight, bottom line.
I'm there yelling with the lady going, his name is Sims, he's coming. And then, no, I'm on the flight by myself. But I'm glad you made it.
I made it, yeah. I got to my hotel last night at 1:40 in the morning, woke up 6 hours later. We went over to Levi Stadium, which was awesome.
It was.
Still an amazing stadium.
Holy moly.
I've been in there 3 times, and every time I go, wow, this
place
is special.
Kyle did not come say hello.
Yeah, what a jerk Kyle Shanahan is.
Yeah, what a
Some
jerk.
Some friend he is. I might have to scribble his initials away off my legs.
By the way, end of the podcast, John David Washington interview, great actor. He is the wide receiver on Ballers. He's in the new movie Black Klansman, which is out now, which you should go see. He is also Denzel Washington's son. 30-minute interview, and I thought it was awesome.
Awesome.
Really good dude, and your dad's Phil Simms, his dad's Denzel. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty close, right? Yep. I'm sure my dad could walk through Germany and they'll know who he is. Denzel's on a different stratosphere than the big fucker.
The interview was great. Speaking of your dad, I actually want to play this.
What?
This is, Colin Cowherd was trying to do a speech about why the Giants, it doesn't work out with Odell Beckham. And he's saying that, Odell Beckham's a little crazy, he's a little sexy, and the Giants, they are the opposite of that. And this is what he said about the Giants and their history with stars.
Sure.
I mean, if you look at the history of the New York Giants, look at their stars. Mark Bavaro, Phil McConkey, David Tyree, Jeff Hostetler, Phil Simms. Anybody got an espresso? Even your stars are boring.
Boo. I mean, it, you know.
I think he did a really good job of trying to not name, like, the biggest stars.
Which would be who?
I mean.
Lawrence Taylor.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Plaxico Burress.
I mean, there's been a number. Jeremy Shockey's been there. It's not it's been, like, this choir boy setting. Tiki Barber, was he a choir boy? Because
no.
I think everybody hated him in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So I get that. I know what he's trying to say. It is kind of an understated organization. The Maras are that type of family.
Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, Dad is like an Eli. I mean, he's not a sexy star. If you watch – people need to go back and YouTube videos of my dad being interviewed in the mid-'80s, and you'll understand why some local people did not like Phil Sims, because he was so just – you know, Kentucky, humble. I'm not going to really give any indication of who I am as a person.
Right.
I'm going to give you these robotic answers. And even when I go back and look at them at times, because I love to, like, turn on my dad's old games and things like that, I just go, damn, well, no wonder a lot of people were like didn't like you when we were playing. I mean, it was you're allowed to smile. You're allowed to have personality.
Yeah, but that was Parcells for
sure. I know,
sure.
It was. It was definitely Parcells.
I just thought it was funny that in Cowherd's rant, to show all of the boringness, he buttoned it with Phil Sims. Because you always end with the one that's the most boring.
Yes.
Apparently that's Big Phil.
Big Phil.
We were going to have Big Phil on today, but the problem is he's too busy.
Well,
he's training like every up-and-coming big-time quarterback that's going to the NFL.
We're taping at 5:40 West Coast time, and it is 8:40 there.
Oh.
And I would bet you he is working on the field with somebody right now. That's really his passion.
Who.
It's his passion right now. It could be just
he loves coaching young kids.
He loves. I think if they paid more money, he would have been a coach a long time ago.
Mm.
But, yeah, he loves coaching young kids. It could be some obscure kid from my high school. That's what's crazy is one week it would be like, oh, that NFL quarterback's coming in? And then the next week you're like, who are you working with? Oh, just some kid from some high school around the corner. You're like, what? Okay. But he loves it, and it doesn't matter who it is. He loves the talking ball and finding the challenge of how to fix this guy to make him better.
Yes. One thing that I always love is Hard Knocks, and it returned. You haven't seen it yet.
No, I have not.
I'm sure a lot of people have. Let me just kind of go over some of the big moments. Jarvis Landry gave a very impassioned speech in the locker room, pretty much saying that losing shit is contagious and it ends now.
Yep. Don't listen to Chris Sims. He doesn't know what he's talking about ranking wide receivers.
Yeah, maybe that's where the anger comes from.
I talked about this on Monday. I don't know if you listened to the Monday.
I did, yeah. You want an apology? Yeah.
Yes, I do.
What do you think, I don't listen to the podcast?
Well, yeah, okay, good. I know, I wasn't sure.
Sorry, continue.
No, please. There was one part at the very end that I really liked, which was Greg Williams. He goes hoarse by the third day of practice every year.
Yeah, got to get your voice in shape in camp. I always went hoarse, too.
And someone said to him, do you have a lozenge? And he goes, no shit, I got a lozenge, bitch. And it was just like the most Greg Williams thing ever.
Doesn't even know what it means.
So you went hoarse in training camp all the time, too.
I think coaches and quarterbacks go training camp hoarse all the time. Because
how do you train that? Do you yell in the offseason?
Yeah, right. No, you don't. So that's what I mean. Right. All of a sudden, you're thrown into there and you're going, oh, okay, I'm the starting quarterback, and I had to yell the snap count 100 times today with true voice inflection.
Hold on 1 second.
Oh, Vancouver flight, get your ass over there.
Get there now.
Get there now or you're screwed.
All right, so continue.
But, yeah, you have to get your voice in shape just like anything else. I mean, Gruden used to be hoarse as hell in meetings with us.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, what were you thinking here, Sims? And you'd be like, I mean, we were all like that because, okay, 100 play calls, you yell at a few guys that are out there lined up wrong, like, hey, move over. You're talking intensely in the huddle.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is strain on the vocal passage.
Speaking of volume, I'm realizing I have no semblance of how loud I am right now on this airport.
Yeah, you're not as loud as normal.
Well, you know, I don't know how loud I am.
Yeah, right. But you're not as
Josh,
loud
what
as
do you
normal.
Think? How loud am I? Okay,
yeah.
Normal conversation.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm worried. I'm just, you know, I was curious.
Yeah.
But I thought there was one part that was weird where the running backs coach and Todd Haley.
You do this a lot. You know that? You make runnings back coach. Runnings back. It's a plural. You're an English fixer-upper all the time.
And
it's
I
a
say
running back coach. You said
we're outside the access point. I could have had a few shots
running
of tequila.
Running backs coach.
Oh, I'm going to need some tequila after this. But the running backs coach.
Yeah.
Maybe I do say it weird.
And you're
Todd Haley.
That?
Yeah, maybe. We're both complaining about all the injuries and how they think these guys need to tough it up and play.
Yeah.
And here is what Hugh Jackson said to them that caused Greg Williams and Todd Haley to look at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, I don't know if they're – like, a lot of the episode was about Hugh Jackson and the losses in his family. He becomes a very sympathetic figure.
Right.
But there was a lot of parts where I was like, I don't know if John Dorsey likes Hugh Jackson, and I don't know if these other coaches like Hugh Jackson.
I can tell you this. Hugh doesn't care. and me being around you, he don't really care.
Well, here's what he said. Guys, listen, I'm excited about what you're doing. I'm going to say it again, but the chair I sit in is a little different than the chairs you guys sit in. I get to watch from a different lens, okay? And I think you guys can all respect that. At the end of the day, I get to drive the bus, and I'm going to do it the way that I want it. That's it. Is that how it works? Okay?
Yeah.
And it was the fact that everybody knew it was on camera, and it kind of felt like an adult, like, disciplining its kids.
Right, right.
And I'm sitting there going, Do you think Tomlin was doing that to Todd Haley?
No.
I don't think so either. Todd Haley looked like he was just like,
well,
like
authority,
really eating his pride.
Well, yeah, authority is going to be questioned anytime you're 1-31. Like,
how could it not?
Right, exactly right. And, you know, I hear things like that. Listen, those conversations go on in the NFL between some of the best coaches. Sometimes you got to just put people in line a little bit.
Yeah.
To go, like, hey, don't forget, I'm the man here.
Otherwise, you'll lose your team.
You will lose your team, and you don't want to lose your coaches. But the other thing that's interesting about that little conversation, too, is both those guys have been head coaches. I mean, they it's not like they don't know. So, and but I will say this, to defend a guy like Hugh Jackson is, this is also another thing that coordinators do too much in the NFL. They really do. They're too worried about their side of the ball. They want their toys on their side of the ball to be out there.
Yeah.
They have these personable relationships, but I still think Hugh, and I haven't seen it yet, is saying and meaning the right thing. That's the job of the head coach.
Yeah.
Keep the big picture in mind. We're not worried about how good we are in training camp number 10 practice.
And he's also being super coy about Josh Gordon. Like, I can't tell what's actually going on and where he's going to be. He seems throughout very confident that it's going to show up, but he's not saying anything. And I do think it sounds like at this point they just don't want to have him on Hard Knocks. They don't want to make that the story of the offseason. They don't want to focus on his issues and bring it all up and all that. That's kind of the vibe I get from Hugh in the show.
You think that's why? You think that's the main reason he's not there?
It just sounds – either that or it's really questionable.
Well, I know. That's what I mean. I don't know where I think on this.
The problem is I don't want to hypothesize
that
he's going through these issues again as someone that's been in those issues.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm going to play the wait and see. And there's a lot of theories.
Yes, there's wait
a lot
and see.
Of theories.
I
your gut's telling you that it's not good, though.
No, well, yeah, my gut tells me it's not good, and my gut tells me it's not about Hard Knocks because, again, I just don't know. Okay, it's a guy that hasn't played a lot of football, and now we're going to take reps away from him because Hard Knocks in town. That just doesn't make sense to me. He's a guy that has to get back into football shape, reprove himself, all those things. So, yeah, I got to think that there's a slip-up, or maybe it's just, hey, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's an anxiety, stress order, whatever. But he's figuring it out, and we'll find out at some point.
Speaking of what?
Just so you know, we got an hour till boarding.
Okay.
So
we'll make it.
Nice. Let's try and wrap this thing up here.
all right, speaking of another wide receiver that's apparently having issues with his team, Martavis Bryant.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do at Sims and Lefko, I think it's happened the last week now, is we're trying to show you how stories in the media formulate and what happens.
Right.
So James Jones, former wide receiver for the Raiders, for the Packers, the guy that wore the hoodie under his jersey that one time, and it was crazy.
Right.
He said on NFL Network that he talked to Raiders offensive coordinator Greg Olsen, and that Olsen told him Brian hasn't learned the playbook. Quote, I just had a chance to speak with Coach Olsen, and he said talent-wise, there's probably nobody better that can compete with Bryant, but he said he's not picking up the playbook, and that's the reason of a little frustration right now. Literally an hour later, John Gruden comes out and says, not only is Martavis Bryant good, he's great. 2 days after he himself called out Martavis Bryant.
Right.
This was James Jones, in our opinion, not knowing how the media works. And you don't put the guy on blast. You're supposed to say the team is a little frustrated.
I heard from a source or a coach told me.
Yes.
Right? So not only is it that, then a position coach came out after Gruden and also reaffirmed that Martavis is working hard. Yeah, so I'm glad that you're bringing this up.
And I want to say, I'm going to add a little fuel to the fire. I went on NFL.com and one story was up, and that was Gruden says Martavis Bryant is great. No mention of the NFL Network's own James Jones breaking that, which shows you again. Like, I know you use NFL.com, and I know I put people on blast, and it's going to come back to bite me eventually.
That's okay. I don't care.
But, like, that to me, you're not putting out all the stories.
No, you're not.
You're lying to fans that care about your product because you're trying to protect the Shield, and to be honest, we're just going to give
a
you the
Shield
truth.
And one of their own employees that made the story. But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad you're bringing it up because it is about reading the tea leaves of the NFL and little things like that. first of all, yeah, James Jones didn't take the right approach. I bet you Greg Olsen walked into the room and saw that.
He freaked out.
I bet you Gruden freaked out on him, whatever it may be. And I think Olsen was probably going, man, I'm telling a trusted ex-player here.
Yes.
Something that, you know, he can report, but don't attribute my name to it.
And so, he probably didn't think that he needed to clarify that it was an off-the-record
I would think so. But, yes, then the full-fledged attack by the Raiders to put the positive spin on the Martavis Bryant thing. You know, again, you're going to hear about guys having issues learning a new offense. You hope that teams don't put you on blast. I know being on and playing for John Gruden before that he can put too much on your plate, especially when you're trying to learn it. Like with the Martavis Bryant, who's been in one system his whole career and came from Clemson, where I don't think it was overly complicated, you have to do your best to just make it simple for him at first. Learn this one spot. Learn X receiver. And we'll just build from there.
Right.
And after you master that, then we'll maybe throw in a few slot plays that we feel you can grab. But it is brutal, man. And he went from Pittsburgh with Todd Haley and that offense into Gruden. It's a lot to learn. And
that's very different?
It is. It's very different. Todd Haley would be closer to the
Bruce Arians?
With a New England-ish
like
type.
Like a vertical
of,
passing.
Yeah, a little bit. And it's the way they phrase things is completely different.
I mean, the way that you guys talk about learning the West Coast as a rookie, I mean, it sounds like it's the most complicated of all the languages.
It is.
Because it's all about timing, and it's not just about routes.
No, it's not.
Depth.
It's a lot of different things. It's the checks.
Plus,
and I
like,
would say
Jordy's there, and Jordy's like a master of this.
Well, yeah, he's going to know all the basics, but I can promise you Jordy got there and was like, whoa, we didn't do this in Green Bay. We just let Aaron drop back and figure it out when they played this defense. You know, Gruden's going to have an answer for everything. Mm. And that was always what I told you. Like, Gruden is amazing. He's the mad scientist. I know he's going to get that organization in the right way. He's changed as a person. But the interesting thing for me, like we talked about during the owners' meeting, he was carrying around his playbook, right?
He was like teaching himself a simpler way so that he could teach other people.
Right. I wonder how far it went to become simple before he finally said, "Screw it."
And that's my thing.
I'm going back to my
old
ways.
Gruden.
I know
Gruden 100% probably came in and was like, "I'm going to be calm. I'm going to simplify it." And then 3 days in, he's like, I need to bring in the good shit.
I
need to impress the defense. I need to, like, make my mark on this.
I would not
that makes sense
be
to me.
Shocked, right? I mean, that's just what he does. He loves plays.
How often do Tigers train their stripes?
Never.
I don't even know if that's the phrase.
No, I don't think it's something like that.
It was close enough.
It was close enough.
Yeah,
we got the point.
All right, I got three. Whoa.
Whoa.
Big training camps. I've never whoa'd in an airport before.
a lot of heads turning.
Yeah. This whole process is incredible.
It is.
Really
people
like
at Gate 7 are very confused.
All right, first one up. Frank Gore is very impressed with Kenyon Drake, saying, quote, I kind of see why they traded Jay Ajayi. I'm learning now that you're going on Pro Football Talk and you're kind of taking your gems with you.
Yeah, enough of that.
Well, it's that host there. He just knows how to get the best out of me.
Yeah, well, you know what? He does his accounting. And he
you're
does
just the other guy.
But you've kind of always felt the same way with Kenyon Drake.
I picked him to win Rookie of the Year, which was 3 years ago, right?
Right.
I mean, but yes, he didn't play much as a rookie. Last year we did see some of his talent.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were willing to let Damian Williams go too.
Right. And I think, yes, he is a guy that I look at. First of all, he's electric in Alabama. Of course, he had to share carries with other guys. But I do think his skill set fits NFL football way better than college. And I know on the show on PFT the other day.
Yeah, but why? It hasn't really come out the first 2 years. Why are you confident that the third year could be the year it comes out?
Because it came out enough last year for me to go.
He did have a few major sparks.
The second half of the year, it was pretty strong.
Yeah.
Kick returns, receiving, whatever it may be.
Explosive plays.
Yes. And that's the type of ability he has. I know on the show I said the other day that he could be a, you know, Alvin Kamara type of guy for that offense this year, and I do think that that's certainly something to look at.
Yeah, when you look at the second half of the season, he had 120 against Denver and a touchdown with three catches for 21 yards. Next week against New England goes for 114 with five catches for 79 yards. He was getting in the teens of carries, but he was also catching multiple balls a game.
Yes.
And, I mean, the dude has a spark. The question is, he barely played in the first half, so did he just have rested legs in the second half? We're going to find out. And plus, with Adam Gase's offense, he loves sending those guys little wheel routes, getting them out in the open.
He definitely does. He's going to know how to use the running back really any way possible. I mean, that's the awesome thing. He's not going to get worn out with Frank Gore being there because he'll take some carries away from
let
him.
Let Frank Gore pound. And then use Kenyon Drake more in the second half.
The biggest thing with Drake that we have to watch out for it. It became a little bit of a problem last year.
Fumbles?
Yes. It was his problem in college. It's his problem in the NFL. So that's going
to
be the thing I watch out for.
There's no way to get benched faster.
No, you'll especially with a coach like Adam Gase he's a no-nonsense guy. People are already going, if Miami doesn't turn it around, maybe Adam Gase is in trouble.
All right, I got another.
Big
training camp.
Big airport.
Noah Spence put on 35 pounds.
Oh, he's doing drugs. He's doing steroids.
By eating nine.
Steroids, there's no way.
By eating 9,000 calories a day. 9,000 calories a day, and he put on 35 pounds this offseason.
Yeah.
Two things. One, I wish we all could productively eat 9,000 calories a day.
Right.
Number two, is it healthy to put on 35 pounds in like 3 months?
No. Is it healthy?
Are we sure?
I mean, 9,000 calories a day is not good for anybody, I don't really think. I mean, guys like him, or we just were with George Kittle with the 49ers.
Yes.
He's doing the same type of thing. He's got to eat and drink protein shakes to be 247.
Yes.
He's one of those guys. There are certain guys
they're
in the
natural,
league that are
like 230 guys.
They're like 15 to 20 pounds lighter than what they really are. Noah Spence, that's certainly been an issue from him coming out, he's way undersized.
Yeah.
The big thing for him is going to be maintaining it. Okay, yes, you put weight on.
But then throughout the season, you might lose 20 pounds.
You're going to be stressed. You're getting physically worn out.
And you're not eating like that during the season.
It's going to be. I mean, it's hard. It weighs on you.
Do you know any teammates that like put on a lot and like had a trouble maintaining it?
There was definitely always a faction in the locker room of 5, 6, 7 guys who, you know, like we always talk about, there was the guys that had to work hard to stay up at their weight.
Yes.
And then there's really the other rest of the team that's all like watching what they eat so they can stay at their weight limit.
Yes.
But those tight ends, undersized linebackers,
rushers.
Yes. They have metabolism sometimes there. You just go, I mean, he could eat just straight lard and he's not going to do anything. Like, he's not going to put
up. Have you ever seen anybody do that?
He'll become more ripped. And he'll be like, the fat was good for his system. And then learn that he burns more fat.
These guys' bodies.
They're freaks of nature.
Are incredible.
Yes.
Like, okay, so just to kind of give you guys behind the curtain, we were in San Francisco and we were hanging out with George Kittle and Trent Taylor.
Yep.
But George Kittle's body, he's enormous. Like, if you saw him at a club, you go, holy crap. Like, what is that
right.
guy?
I know. He's 6'5".
I mean, the stuff that dude puts down from Panda Express,
My gosh. Their stomachs.
He told me what he eats for lunch, and I went, well, that's probably what I would eat for 4 different meals from that place.
Yes. Now, he's working out like a madman, so his body
He did the arm farm before he came to us.
What is an arm farm?
I never heard that phrase exactly.
I think it's like you do your tries, your buys, your shoulders. Like,
okay,
you do
so
all
that's
of
what
it.
I normally do. I just didn't know it was called an arm farm.
Yeah, it's normally what you do. Don't seem to get the same
results. You were saying that a lot of guys do it like the day before the game or the Friday.
Yes.
So that you go out there and you're looking real big and you're feeling real strong.
You don't want to do any like squats or power cleans the day or day two before the game. But,
God forbid your back or your legs are sore.
Oh, but DBs, linebackers, defensive ends on a Friday in the NFL season, they are going to go in and practice, and you're going to go in there and see some freaks. Just all they're doing is arms. That's their one day that we're going to do arms so they look good in their uniform. And there's more biceps and triceps popping places. It's unbelievable.
That's really a thing?
It's a thing with everybody.
How?
Tennessee.
They're not tired,
Titans,
though?
No, because it's also arms. Everybody gets into it. It's Friday. It was an easy day of practice. I got the rest of the day off. Saturday's going to be a walkthrough.
Yeah.
And
I also think like this. Like, you don't ever want to do arms if you're playing basketball, right? Because it messes up touch. But how many of those motherfuckers are touching a ball?
No, they got
nothing to
worry about.
They want their arms big as hell because they're throwing them at people. So they don't really care about touch. They want it to be just like a mass of muscle that they throw at
Definitely.
People.
No, quarterbacks, receivers.
Yeah, quarterbacks aren't doing
receivers
that
Receivers aren't doing it either, really. I mean, they might go in there real quick and just do a little something, but they're not worried about that. No, it's a
totally defensive. You want swollen meat sticks hanging from your body.
Watterson in Tennessee. My old strength coach.
Watterson?
Watterson, yeah, but he's from Rhode Island. So
Watterson.
He said Watterson. I'm Coach Watterson from Rhode Island. And he would get in on the arms days.
Oh, really?
Oh, but man, him and Chris Harper and Kyle Vandenbosch and this group of guys.
And they just got like 150 dumbbells.
They'd
overhead.
Be going like hardcore, sleeves rolled up.
Oh, yeah.
and just getting after it.
George Kittle didn't have sleeves. He didn't have shoulders. It, like, the shirt went from his neck to his hip. And I was like, all right, you're making me uncomfortable.
The tan line.
I got two quotes from you, two different people. One is Eric Weddle. He says, I think in 5 years it's going to be out, talking about the RPO.
Yeah.
I think it's just another phase. It's a revolving door, like the Wildcat, the quarterback run game, yada, yada, yada. Teams that run the ball and take shots are usually the hard teams to beat. Do you agree with him? The RPO is just a phase.
Yes, I don't think it's ever going to be, like, completely out of the game, but it's not going to be featured as much as we saw last year or maybe even the start of this year, because it is.
I think if you had a mobile quarterback, you hold the defensive end. There's a benefit to it.
Certainly. There's always going to be benefits to it, yes. But they're gonna start to find things that maybe are not beneficial to it. And, again, just like anything else, like the short passing game with the bubble screens and all that stuff, the year Peyton Manning threw 55-yard touchdowns, that shit came to an end in a hurry because – defenses change their scheme. The cover three press bail became, we'll get another guy down there to protect against that stuff. There will be adjustments made. And what other people don't forget, this is really the biggest reason things like these don't last long in the NFL.
Okay, let's hear this.
It's just the talent on the field. In a college game, you know, you could be playing against a defensive end or a weak side linebacker. That's great. He's Johnny Tryhard that is the starting college linebacker.
Right.
But in the NFL, you're going to see two freaks at that position on a weekly basis.
That can literally cover the running back and the quarterback at the same
time. Could stay, like Anthony Barr can be like, I'm going to stay in the passing lane. And then when he hands it off, I'll run him down and go get him.
Because I'm that good.
I'm that good, and I'll meet him at the hole in the weak side gap if he makes that cutback.
The talent really does overwhelm
everything else. That's the thing, right. I mean, you know, yeah, running quarterbacks, really? Okay, yeah, they're going to work to a degree, but like a Colin Kaepernick, right? I mean, he ran for a year or two, and then that shit ended in a hurry, too. Yeah. You know?
It always everyone does. Figures it out.
Right.
All right, and then this is for...
Well, the other thing, though, that he said about running the ball and taking shots, that's what wins... I mean, it's like we talk about it all the time. Teams that have the fullback, they seem to always be the best offenses. Yeah. The Saints, the Patriots, the 49ers.
Jaguars.
Right. The Atlanta Falcons. Yes. All of them use fullbacks. And what do? They also run the ball. And you go, damn, we got to worry about the down. And all of a sudden it goes, whoa, Julio Jones is behind me for 70 or Taylor Gabriel or whatever, whoever it may be. Marcus Goodwin.
It seems like more of a threat.
It definitely is. It's harder to defend. There's more to defend.
Aaron Rodgers sat down with Kevin Clark of The Ringer, and he was asked, if you were commissioner, what would you do? And two things kind of caught my attention. One saying the owner shouldn't be able to pass rules without ratifying it through the players, which I think was kind of thrown in our faces this year with the anthem policy.
Yep.
And the second one is talking about the cap and a hard cap in the NFL and how he wishes it was more like the NBA, saying with the luxury tax that he would allow teams to go over the cap, that if they did, they would get hit with the luxury tax. We're not hurting, just like the NBA, we're not hurting for revenue.
Right.
We're doing excellent, and I think we should be able to do luxury tax instead of a hard cap.
I do too.
But there's no way the NFL owners will allow a removal of the hard cap. I talked to Howard Beck about a hard cap in the NBA,
right,
and he says every single year it's the number one thing on the itinerary, and every single year the players go, absolutely not.
Of course.
But the owners go, if we don't put it number one, then we're being an idiot, because of course we want a hard cap.
Right.
The NFL owners are sitting in a power position where they have it and you got to remove it. And it's kind of at this point, I mean, the NFL players would want to put all their chips to change that, but there's so much more of the CBA that need to change.
There's so many more chips that need to be changed, like the fifth-year option for rookie players, or restricted free agents, or whatever, unrestricted free agents, tenders, all those. It's a long line of things. The NFL players are never going to win this war with these owners with the way that it is and the current status of the average career of the players.
Yes.
I'll say this. This is where it's interesting to me, and this may be to where – I don't know if the NFL owners can find the analytics or something that's where it would pay for them. To me, it could increase rivalry football.
Okay.
And it can increase your ability to keep your star players.
Okay.
Like, I just think about my time in Tampa, right?
Yes.
Tampa, getting towards the end of the career, they wanted to keep Derek Brooks, they wanted to keep Rondae Barber, all those things, because it was part of the identity of the Bucs.
But the same thing with Brian Dawkins and the Eagles.
Well, yeah, and the value is exactly right. Exactly.
And he got paid $9 million for the Broncos, and the Eagles were like, You're a $5 million safety at this point of your career.
Yes, so I wish they could find some way to keep those guys. To
like, like a legendary player salary.
Exactly, like he's saying, a luxury tax. So now, okay, he got offered $9 million. We can pay him $9 million too. But since he's been on our team for 6 or years more, you can deduct one-third of the salary, whatever it may be.
That'd be
there
dope.
Has to be something like that. I think it's going to make the sport better. It's going to make more
this
players.
This would come into play with Earl Thomas right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. It would make players more identifiable with their teams.
Because they don't want to leave.
No, and it's going to increase rivalries. It's just like we talk about back in the 80s. Part of the reason my dad hated your Philadelphia Eagles because he saw Reggie and Jerome Brown every twice
yeah.
a year.
Yeah.
It was personal. It was like,
yeah.
no, fuck you. You did that to me last year, and you're back, and I want payback. That's why my dad hated the 49ers. It was the same 11 guys on defense
right,
every
so
year.
So two things we want to add is a separate salary cap for running backs and then some form of super veteran legend.
Right, legend. Legend
what's salary
your,
what's tax. What's it called when your parents give you money?
Allowance.
Allowance.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a legend allowance.
Right. Like you can relegate three guys to legend status on your roster every
That's
year.
That's pretty dope.
You know what I mean?
I like that.
And you go, okay,
do
three
we need
guys.
To go to the owners' meetings and help negotiate the new CBA?
It would help with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, here's $30 million a year, but it only counts for 20 against us.
Quick thoughts on germaphobe Josh sitting on an airport for right
I was
now.
Actually going to call him out on that.
Oh, I already called myself out on it, but what do you want me to do here?
We're I wish you could have snoozed, but yeah, especially right
feel?
Outside the bathroom.
I feel
too.
Disgusting, but I mean, whatever I need to do to get the podcast done.
You are,
I love you.
You're the man.
I'm going to go to the room. I'm going to run my jeans in the bathtub. I'm going to dry them overnight.
He's going to be like, it's going to be like Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
You're going to set all your clothes on fire. And you're going to be in the bathtub with a plunger over your face being like, not clean.
If Erica was here right now and saw me rolling around on the floor of the airport outside of the bathroom, I might not be allowed back
That's
in the apartment for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really proud of you, though.
That's
you're, you're really taking it for the team right now.
We're just two weirdos sitting here. That's all right.
Yeah.
No way.
We are getting
you guys
looked, at,
come
like,
on?
We're getting looked at like zoo animals. One other quote, though, from Aaron Rodgers made me filled with pride.
Oh.
And it made me go,
oh,
this
Aaron
is our
Rodgers.
Quarterback. Yes. We have always said that we needed one of the famous white quarterbacks to stand up and speak their mind on this. And in this article, Aaron Rodgers went for it. I don't know how many times we can say, as a player and as a group, how much we love and support and appreciate the troops and the opportunity this country allows us. But this is about equality and something bigger than ourselves and bringing people together and love and connectedness and equality and social justice and putting a light on people who deserve to have the attention for their causes and their difficult situations that they're in. You know, people have their opinion. You shouldn't do it during the anthem. You shouldn't do it during this. That's fine. But let's not take away from what the real issue is.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep.
That's it.
This is what we need. This is, I mean, I hope he continues to be vocal about that because he is somebody that can get some of the people on the other side.
And he's so
well
spoken.
That's what I mean.
He's very well thought out.
He really is. And he showed us that he has the guts to make little stands like that.
Yes.
And not care necessarily. Between that and the fact that he cussed out his young receivers this week.
Saying that they put up no effort. It was embarrassing.
He's getting to that point in his career.
He's done with the bullshit.
I'm done with the bullshit. I'm here to win games and win Super Bowls, and it doesn't matter anymore. I don't give a shit if you guys
you know
like
what
me
it is,
what.
Man? I'm going to be real.
Yeah.
So Aaron Rodgers is like 34 years old, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm reaching that point in my life.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think in your mid-30s, you reach a point where you're just done with the bullshit.
I get you.
Like, damn. I want to.
You're in your mid-30s?
I'm 32.
My man.
I mean, what's the difference between me and Aaron Rodgers?
Not much.
We're
you're
just
right.
both fed up with the... I think
that,
it's a mix of
100
age,
million, but...
But I also think Aaron Rodgers... Okay. We always talk about this with players. Aaron Rodgers isn't just 34.
Yeah.
He's like 45 right. because everyone in the locker room is now so young and so annoying.
Yes.
And they're not paying attention.
Right.
Yeah, but you loved Aaron Rodgers ripping into those guys.
I loved it because it showed me he's like you said, it's just no nonsense. He's had enough. It's
he
about
kind
winning.
Of always felt like, I'm going to do my thing and everybody else do their thing.
Yes.
And this
I'll trust that you'll get it right.
This offseat, you're right. He does feel a little bit more like, no.
Right.
Do what I need to do. And all the coaches are saying, he's so ready.
Yeah.
So the whole, like, he's coming back from injury, I think Aaron's super ready.
I do, too. He's a man on a mission. I can't wait. And then the other thing, too, about that, just why we're on that topic, too, is, you know, again, I do like the position of not letting our current president have this jumping off point. This is why I've been arguing about the kneeling during the anthem, because this is one of his rallying cries. And this will take one thing away. So as much as I want everybody to kneel to just shove it in his face, yeah. I also just have another side of me that goes, I don't want him to have any ability to, you know, fan the flames anymore.
Hey, you know the last time that Donald Trump came at somebody and that person just dead it and it hasn't continued? LeBron motherfucking James.
Right, that's right.
You know, it's if you have somebody that wants to be the town crier and that calls out people all the time, you know how you handle it?
Yeah.
I'm not listening to
right.
you. You're unimportant to me.
Yes.
All right, one more thing before we get to John David Washington. It was actually a really good interview. You'll tell by the end of it, he was looking at us and going, you two are crazy.
Yeah, he was
like,
awesome.
He legitimately said that.
Yeah.
But it was good.
The insight with Spike Lee was amazing, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we kind of talked about, we compared, like, Belichick and Spike Lee. It's a pretty cool comparison.
Uh-huh.
But Khalil Mack, they're actually admitting that maybe a trade could be happening, which I know that we're both going, don't do it.
I think it's posturing. I really do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I've talked about this before in the Undoing Project. Hold on, pray for this guy's photo. Give it on. Yeah. No, take it. Yeah.
He did.
Okay, good. In the Undoing Project, that first chapter is all about the Houston Rockets. And one thing that was cool is he goes, they know the trade value for every guy on their team. So even though James Harden just won MVP, they know if you offer them this guy, and these amount of picks, that fulfills it. That's the value to get him,
yeah.
And now we'll go that we're going to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, of course you don't want to trade Khalil Mack, but in your mind, what would the offer have to be for the Raiders to go, damn, that's actually good value?
Yeah, I mean, two first-rounders not going to happen, right? I don't think that happens.
You don't think a team gives two
I don't think anybody gets two first-rounders.
What if you're a team like the Saints?
Yeah.
That maybe you're not sure about your pass rush,
right?
And you're going, we're trying to win a Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
Our window with Drew Brees is closing.
Yeah.
You know, we can live on second and third round picks and stuff
yeah,
like that.
You're right. Well, they just traded a first round pick to get a pass rusher,
exactly.
Right? But yeah, I can see
Marcus Davenport.
That type of thing. Certainly, I think realistically,
the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, realistically, yeah, you're.
But they're a good drafting team. The shitty drafting teams like the Browns. You know, maybe you trade. Like, none of your first-round picks are on the team for the last 8 years. Maybe you get Myles Garrett and Khalil Mack, give up some of those first-round picks. That's not a bad team.
No, I mean, it's just about, okay, you're going to give up a first-round.
Is it only going to take two first-round picks, though?
No, I think it's going to take – well, no, I don't think anybody's going to give a first-round pick for anybody in the sport except for two first-round picks for anybody except for maybe Aaron Rodgers. Like, Odell Beckham Jr.
Timeout.
We heard
– who are the guys in the NFL that would take two first-round picks?
Man.
That you would actually give it up?
Yeah.
Would you give it up for Tom Brady?
No, I don't think – not
it's
a 41.
Old.
Aaron Rodgers?
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Aaron Rodgers.
What about like a Deshaun Watson?
Ooh. That would be thought about. Where
Carson
he's
Wentz.
At his
yeah,
age.
Carson
yeah,
Wentz.
Where they're at their age, yes, if they caught the right situation.
What about
a
Russell Wilson at 29?
I still think he's young enough to where a team, if they really were like, okay, this is what we're going to do, we're in on Russell Wilson, we like it. Yeah, he's worth two first-round picks. He's definitely worth he's worth two first-round picks.
Any non-quarterbacks? Von Miller?
Not at this age.
Okay.
You know, Odell is borderline.
Todd
Jalen
Gurley.
Ramsey's borderline. Todd Gurley, they're borderline. But I don't think they're going to get two first-round picks.
Aaron Donald?
No. Because no, I don't.
What?
Yeah, I don't.
I'd give up two first-round picks for Aaron Donald.
I hear you. The other thing that's going to, like, the Aaron Donald, Odell Beckham
Just
Jr.
Just pretend Aaron Donald was your first-round pick next year.
Or Khalil Mack. Right, they will do that. But the other thing we have to throw into this conversation is
the money.
You got to pay him $100 million.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the other thing that takes away from the trade value.
I think the Browns should trade for Khalil Mack.
Well,
they suck at drafting.
Three teams that need pass rushers.
Sims did work.
Wow. I mean, three teams.
Look at you.
Right? Now, the first team, I don't know if he'd be willing to give up one of his draft picks because he thinks he's really damn good at evaluating players, and that's Chris Ballard of the Colts. But, damn,
ooh.
I mean, can people even – most people I talk to, I go, can you name me somebody in the front seven of the Colts? And they're like,
All right, let me try.
Yeah.
Hassan Ridgeway.
There we go.
Okay, so I got one.
Yep.
Do they still – God damn.
It's tough.
I got nothing.
I mean, they took the Kamika Toreo, right?
Oh, our guy from Rutgers.
Exactly,
are
right?
You?
Yeah,
are
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Are you? Are
you
looking at the front?
Yeah,
seven?
I've just pulled it up. I'm just looking up. It's like they're linebackers. All right. Well, so they got Danico. Let me sort this.
Danico Autry. I got it. Al Woods, Danico Autry, Jabal Sheard. I forgot they got him.
Yeah, they got Jabal. John Simon.
Damn. Najee Good. Yo, their linebackers
Raheem
are
Nunez,
such
Rochez.
Trash.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's just a lot of Al Woods there as a D-tackle.
Yeah, they might have the worst roster.
That's good.
I think the Cardinals have a better roster than them.
I would agree so, too. I don't think they're going to win as many games because if Andrew Luck's healthy, he's the great eraser.
And they just lost their center, A.Q. Shipley.
You know,
All right, so the Colts are a team that you could see trading
for
them.
Definitely, because there's just no difference maker there. I don't know if they'd be willing to do that. The Buffalo Bills. I mean, the Buffalo Bills got nothing coming off the edge. You know, Jerry Hughes is up there in age. Shaq Lawson's been unimpressive at this point.
It's Trent Murphy.
Right.
Yeah, they got nothing.
They got nothing. Now, the third team is interesting, and they have money and all, like the 49ers. If you're going, man, we don't have a difference maker on our front seven other than Reuben Foster.
Right.
And I think they got a lot of good.
Yeah, because you look at their
guy.
Team, Arik Armstead, and I know they love DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas. They're all super solid, but they don't have the guy to get the quarterback.
No, they don't have just the one.
Why are you laughing?
I just thought it was funny.
They just don't have that one super freak to come up.
And that could be Khalil.
It could be Khalil.
And he's
already
in the Bay.
He's already in the Bay. But would the Oakland, even for the right price, would they really trade their biggest star across the Bay and then have him watch be a star?
They're going to Vegas.
Yeah, you're right. But it's 2 years, and they still might have to hear about it. And if Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers start outperforming him, then it's just going to add it on double.
Yeah,
John ain't going to like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, John
doesn't want to get shown up by one of his disciples his first year out here.
That's right. It is his child.
Right. So that would be something to watch
out for. Your gut says, though, that Mac's not going anywhere.
I do, yes. I think this is all a move because I'm sure defensive players love playing for the Raiders. It's the Raiders. It's, man, I'm mean dad, and they let me do whatever I want because it's the Davis family, and they don't care about bending the rule. So there is something to that. It's a
negotiating tool.
It's a negotiating tool. They're just trying to chop a few million dollars off of a guarantee.
If you were the Green Bay Packers, what would it take to trade Aaron Rodgers?
Oh.
For you.
Yeah.
Not like what you think people would give you. What would it take for you to trade Aaron Rodgers? Like if somebody offered you 2 first-round picks for Aaron Rodgers.
No. I wouldn't do it.
3 first-round picks. Sims.
I mean, hey, you know, again.
Sims.
But again, this is where you're acting like first-round picks or some slam dunk or something.
I get it. But 3?
Well, I don't know. I'm the Green Bay Packers right now. And, damn, when Aaron Rodgers is not there, we're 6-10. And when he's there.
4.
And when he's there. I mean, of course, I'd probably do it. I'd probably do it for 3. But I would have a hard time. I'm telling you, at this point, I don't know if it'd be worth it.
Look,
I don't think there's anything worth it.
Every time there is a trade for picks, the NFL online community always calls a team that gets the picks the winner. Always. Look at all the picks the Browns got for Carson Wentz. None of those picks have turned into anything.
Yeah.
You look at the trade now, it's like Sean Coleman and Corey Coleman and all these guys that are like not even on the team anymore.
Right.
The Eagles won in a landslide because you're trading for the real commodity instead of the 10 different roulette chips.
Then we hope our evaluation staff can really hit everything right here for the draft the next 3 years.
It's a crapshoot. It's the one thing that Belichick's not good at in the NFL. So you think you're going to be good at it? You're crazy.
I agree.
Oh, the Seahawks were the best drafters and then go on a draft drought for like 3 to 4 years.
Exactly.
Like, I'm telling you, that one Saints draft with Kamara and the offensive lineman.
Yeah, Ramchek.
Yeah, all those guys.
Right.
They're going to be called geniuses for the next 3 years. Yeah. And I'm guaranteeing you that their next 2 drafts, maybe not, I don't know about this draft, but they're going to have drafts where there's complete duds.
Yeah,
sure. Because it's a crapshoot.
Yes, it is. There's just too many variables, and you can't always expect to hit right. And, you know, you might have guys that you go, damn, this. If we get one of these 7 guys at pick 17,
we're great.
We're awesome. Oh, shit, all 7 are off the board?
Yeah.
That'll change everything. So, yeah, it's just too unpredictable at that point. And, yes, I think Khalil Mack stays there. I mean, Khalil Mack is I guess it's him and Derek Carr, the face of the Raiders, right? I mean,
and Amari Cooper. That's like the trio.
Right. And I would argue maybe Khalil Mack is the face more than anybody right now.
Derek Carr is the face.
You think he's more?
Do we know which reporter put out the Khalil Mack trade rumors? Was it Rappaport?
No. So it actually started like this. One reporter was making like a Bleacher Report type article where it's like the player that I see could get traded, and he said Khalil Mack, but then like the team really didn't denounce it.
Gotcha. You know,
like they didn't really come out and go, no, no, no.
I just want to pay attention to the news now,
you know what?
Where it's coming from.
There was another story in which an NFC person said that he believed that Khalil Mack was open on the market.
Yeah, give me a little Roto World. Who's the source on that?
I'm looking. Okay, here we go.
Pull up the teams.
Here we go. Khalil Mack, trade odds increasing every day, says NFC executive.
Who's the reporter?
Oh, man.
Give it to me.
Bleacher Report's Mike Freeman.
Freeman.
Love Mike Freeman. Great guy. All right, so I have nothing else except Bridgewater might be traded. Did you have any places where Bridgewater would be interesting?
Yeah. I mean, Bridgewater, there is some places out there that make sense. I mean, first
already,
of all.
Already, even though we don't have the injuries?
Well, yeah, exactly right. Well, and it's a moot point.
Moot.
It is moot.
You kind of half.
I did. It's a moot point until he plays games and everybody can see him.
You're
so
right.
It doesn't really
like
matter.
Like RG3. Oh, now it's interesting.
Oh, hello.
And not only that, we got all these games on Thursday night. We're going to try and find a bar here in California. I need to watch Davis Webb. I need to watch Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, if we have any.
I need to see Deshaun Watson.
If any of the homies are in L.A. and want to come watch some games, we'll say what bar we're going to be at.
Well, we're going to be, in Newport Beach?
We got to figure out where we're going
first,
we'll
be in Newport Beach. It's also going to be 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know if people work here or if they're just going to be out of work watching the games.
It is weird watching sports in California. You've proclaimed that you would hate it.
I have a lot of issues with this. Yeah, I'm not into it.
It throws you off.
It throws me off. I'm just.
Well, I don't work normal hours, so for me, I'd be like, football at 4 o'clock?
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
There is some good. There is some bad. I did enjoy my mountain time living in Denver and being like, man, Monday Night Football, it's 6:30, and it's coming on TV, and it's going to be done at 9:30. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Bridgewater, I'm going to throw you 4 teams real quick.
Okay.
Because I know we're almost done.
Team number 4.
The Bucks.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The house that Chris Sims built.
Jameis Winston. What's his issue?
Right.
It's gross. Is Ryan Fitzpatrick the future? We know the answer to that question. Teddy in Tampa? We'll see.
Exactly. I mean, the other three.
Number three.
The other places I have are all as backups, like for
number
sure.
Number three.
But okay, the Dolphins?
Miami Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill. Quarterback, wide receiver. Nobody knows. All I know. Teddy, he's from Miami. He could fit in real nice swimming with the Dolphins.
I mean, I just don't know. To me, that is when pull up their roster real quick.
Their backup quarterbacks.
Well,
Matt
I know
Moore?
One. Well, it's Brock Osweiler.
Oh yeah,
so,
sexy.
And it's the other guy that's from San Jose. I can't think of.
Yes, it is the one, the only David Fales.
David Fales
and Bryce Petty.
So okay, so you're Adam Gase, and
yeah, you're going. If I lose Ryan Tannehill,
who I've lost. The last 2 years.
And I'm not already sure on.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost them all year last year. The year before, he loses them at the end of the year.
Brock Osweiler came out and said he was having an amazing training.
Gosh. So I would scare the crap out of me, okay?
Number two.
Two. If I'm the Carolina Panthers,
you have Cam Newton. Guess what? You lost your center. You lost your tackle. The rush could be coming, and then you're relying on Derek. Oh, no. He's no longer there, Anderson.
Right.
Who's their backup quarterback? Pull up the teams. It's Garrett Gilbert.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Name the rest of the names there.
Taylor Heineke.
Right.
And Kyle Allen.
Taylor Heineke, right?
Heineke,
who are
right.
these people?
Who are they? Not as good as Teddy Bridgewater.
Exactly. Get and them. That's why they're on this
Garrett
list.
Garrett Gilbert or Garrett Grayson?
No, Garrett Gilbert from Texas who transferred to SMU. Remember Garrett Gilbert was
the guy
that came in on the Alabama National Championship game and played okay as a freshman and then got progressively worse from there.
All right. And the number one team that Teddy Bridgewater could be traded to is?
I mean,
is a team that I've never heard. Okay.
This is a team that we know can go to the Super Bowl, and they have a questionable starting quarterback.
Oh my God. And the most talented starting lineup in the NFL is led by a guy that admits he's not as bad as you think, but he's still bad. He could be coming in over Cody Kessler, the 71st quarterback, or Tanner Lee,
right.
A wide receiver hybrid from the University of Nebraska.
Who everybody already said is the most talented guy they got
but
down there.
But you know they're not going to bring in Teddy Bridgewater? Because he's going to be better than Blake Bortles, and they're not going
to
bring him
Teddy Bridgewater brings the Jaguars to the Super Bowl, right?
I do think so.
Right, let's get this
Teddy
in right now.
A healthy Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay, before we get to John David Washington, oh my God, I believe, yes, that's him. Yep. That's the lead writer for Gridiron Heights.
Dennis Flynn?
Dennis Flynn. Wow. Celebrity. Here in the San Jose airport.
This is why you come to the access point.
God, it's an access point for stars.
It's like Hollywood.
We were talking about the athleticism of Moss versus Terrell Owens. My good friend Dan said, who do you think was a better basketball player? And you said Moss.
Right.
You said Moss had great hand-eye. He could shoot threes. T.O.'s going to like bunch through you, kind of like bowl you over.
Right.
Randy Moss was a better athlete. And you said Randy Moss could throw the ball. Josh jokingly said, could Randy Moss in his prime as quarterback lead the Jaguars to the Super Bowl? And you said...
I was like, I mean, if he taught him some things, then certainly he probably could.
You believe that Randy Moss in his prime could throw the ball better than Blake Bortles?
I think if Randy Moss has more pure potential to be the greater thrower. That's what I'll say.
So if we started... Okay? That's incredible.
It's a good way to put
that. The pure potential to throw it better. Like, I'm just saying if Blake Bortles and Randy Moss came to my house at the age of 18 and Phil Sims, Chris Sims, and Matt Sims went out in the field with them and we went through a week of work, we're going to get them both better, but we're going to go, man, this Randy Moss could really throw it.
I mean, he is one of the greatest athletes of all time.
I know. And we're talking about one of the worst throwing starting quarterbacks of all time.
Of all time? Who else is up there all time?
I don't even know. I mean, he's the
Peyton in the final year.
No.
At the end of the yeah, you're right. I mean, at the Peyton of the final year, it was horrible.
Oh, my gosh.
Is
that Bleacher Report producer, Nicole Peterson? Wow, the stars are out at Access Points.
I don't know. So but
this
then,
is why you come to the San Jose Airport.
Well, keep going, though. Yeah. Like, so Randy Moss, more potential at quarterback than Blake Bortles.
Randy Moss had a special arm. I mean, he could sling it. He really could. I bet you Randy Moss in his prime could throw the ball 70, 75 yards
wow.
in the air. Yeah. He's so flexible. His hands are gigantic. And like I said, I always used to play that game with him. He can throw it. He can. I know that sounds like I'm taking another shot at Blake Bortles and whatever, but, I mean, whatever. Whatever.
He's not apologizing. He's just saying it's not personal.
No, I'm just saying it's a very hypothetical thing to say. But either way, what I'm telling you is, yes, his potential to me would be greater. Yes.
That's all right, awesome. We got to board a plane in 25 minutes.
My dad just texted and said he's ready if you want to call him.
Let's do 5 minutes.
All right, let me try and plug it in.
Well, can you? Is it not going to work?
It's questionable, and right. I would say it's not going to work. Also, Deirdre just DM'd us on the podcast Instagram,
yeah.
And your dad was with her talking about you missing your flight. So I think he was just ducking us.
Oh, he could have been. Or he might have just not looked at his phone.
We're going to tape. Maybe we'll do another podcast tomorrow. We'll call him tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do like some short
and I'll get this. Yeah.
Yeah, so we got – guys, we don't know how many we're going to do this week. We're kind of going all over the place. But follow our social accounts, at Sims and Lefko. We'll update you on if we're going to be doing another one and all that stuff. If you subscribe to the podcast, thank you so much. Share it with your friends. Give us some good ratings for iTunes. It always helps. And again, unsubscribe, resubscribe. It's really good for us. I believe we went to the tops of the Google charts this week, which is super exciting.
What?
Yeah, Google Play charts.
Right.
Shout out to all the Google Play users, all that. We went to the top of those charts.
Wow.
Which is cool.
Awesome.
We're not worried about it, Sims. It's our head down. It's training camp
Keep
season.
Keep grinding.
110%,
That's
one
right.
game at a time.
Yeah.
Left foot in front of the right foot.
Chop wood, as my old friend Greg Schiano used to say.
Pound the rock, that's as my old friend John Gruden used
yep.
to say.
That's stop, how you get to stop. The Insight Bowl in 2006 against Rudy Carpenter in Arizona State. You chop
nice.
Wood.
All right. Stop eating everybody's food, as my mom would say. All right, so now an interview with John David Washington, one of the main actors in BlacKkKlansman, a Spike Lee film. We talk about everything from his dad's movies to the relationship between Phil Sims and Denzel Washington. And at the end, we pretty much were saying that he supports white people more than we do. And he was like, you guys are freaking crazy. So hope you guys enjoy it. We're going to continue our road trip.
Weirdest podcast I ever did.
And we, that's it. From the San Jose Airport outside of Access Point, this is my fake broadcaster voice, and that was Sims Lefko for Sims.
Peace out, homies.
For Fendrick.
Good evening.
Good evening. And for the Elliot.
I get to do that when I'm here.
Yeah, you do.
All right, fine. Let's try it again.
Good
for
evening.
Sims.
Peace out, homies.
For Fendrick.
Good evening.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. One more time.
Just end the podcast.
One more time.
It's over.
For Sims.
Peace out, homies.
For Fendrick.
Good evening.
And the LEF, KLE.
Man.
Well, holla, 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 holla.
End it.
You guys let me know when we're rolling. And if we are, we'll just keep all this in.
I can't believe that.
What's up? Yeah, just go. Whenever, you can just hit record. We're just going to go. I'm not going to introduce it.
All parts are recording.
He should just walk out of camp.
Oh, Odell?
Yeah, he should just be like, all right, see you.
All right, we're going to get to that.
He's already there.
I know. He's just leaving. He can leave.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, has that happened before?
No. I mean, there's going to be more consequences to it, right?
Right?
Because now they'll have the power to basically be like, oh, no, he left camp, and they'd be able to put him on like the NFI, but then the non-football injury list or whatever, they'll put something like that.
Uh-huh.
But what he has to do is he stays, and then he just has
he's
to have
a, hold in.
He has to have a tight hamstring,
every
day.
So it's when you go there and you can't run, right, you don't feel that great.
My hammy's tight. I can't play today. He's going to have to do that.
All right, so hold on. So you play on, we're going to get to Black Klansman, right, John David Washington, and of course, but you play Ricky Jarrett, which is kind of a diva wide receiver in Ballers.
Oh, diva.
Dave, if you're a receiver, you're a diva, John David. Sorry.
Yeah, I would say that you're a self-aware diva.
In the show, you had
a history of diva, but you go, I don't want to be that anymore. Like, I feel like that's your struggle all the time.
He's sensitive.
Yeah.
And not in like necessarily a weak way, but he just feels everything.
Love this character.
Who does?
You do.
Well, it is therapeutic.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like polar opposite of this dude. So like it is kind of therapeutic to be able to explore this guy and what this crazy stuff that he does.
So when you play a wide receiver, then do you look at Odell Beckham and can you see the character that he is?
Well, I mean, I just was able to collect a wealth of experiences of all different positions throughout the years and just kind of combine it. You know, to me, it's about sharing the experience with the people that don't understand, that don't know the perspective of the athlete.
Right. Who are the wide receivers you surveyed? Yeah, what was your compilation? I thought you were a little Jarvis Landry, but that's only because you were in Miami, so I put that together.
Yeah.
But I saw maybe a little Antonio Brown in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was Steve Smith, Jerry Rice, a lot of the greats, but just like Randall Cunningham. He's the reason I wanted to play football. I never seen anybody that looked like me at that position do what he did. I feel like he sort of revolutionized the position a little bit.
Are you an Eagles fan?
Because
he's an Eagles fan.
Are you really?
Oh my God, what?
Are you serious?
I brought him best friends.
I brought it. We were already best friends. Now we're besties. I brought a Brian Dawkins shirt. Did you watch the Hall of Fame?
No, I missed it. I seen some of this. I seen how he came out though, like the Wolverine style.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I saw that though. That was cool.
So our man here actually has the single game record at Morehouse, 242 rushing yards.
Is it still standing? I thought that's not broken.
Oh, on the internet it says it's still standing.
And the internet never lies.
And career, nearly 3,700 rushing yards.
It's pretty impressive.
So my man could tote the rock.
I did all right.
Yeah.
Well, your dad, I mean, I got to ask you about him first of all. All right, first of all, thing is, like,
his dad is Denzel Washington.
Being related to
The hell with him. I like the top button.
Top button swag.
Hello, top button swag.
Oh yeah.
He gets so much shit for the top button.
How you doing?
Why?
I know.
What?
Because from a bunch of corny white people who don't know style, it's not really that big of an issue.
True.
Don't worry.
Why got to be white? Why can't just be people?
Because they're typically the people that say
something.
Seems
to be the white guys that say it. Sorry,
they have more problems with other people.
Yes. All right. So, but your love of football growing up. I mean, was dad the type of guy that had football on Sundays and you were sitting there and that's how it happened?
Yeah, that my pops, uncle, my uncle Rick, he lives in North Carolina. He loved the Green Bay Packers and the Celtics. He was a big Larry Bird fan.
Right.
So, it was always sports, but football, yes, football Sundays.
And what about dad? Who's dad's squad?
The Dallas Cowboys.
He's the Dallas Cowboys?
So Thanksgiving was serious at the house. Yeah.
You got Eagles, he's Cowboys, Lakers, Packers, all in the same house?
Yes, all NFC. We're keeping the NFC.
Yeah, that's good.
I realized earlier this morning that you two have experienced opposite interactions your entire lives. Okay?
Yes. Right.
John David, people have come up to him his entire life and they go, is your dad really that cool? And Chris, your entire life, people have come to you and go, is your dad really that corny?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Phil Simms. Because Phil Simms is character.
Certainly.
Is all, I feel like you guys have had opposite interactions.
Well, we definitely, I'm sure he could speak to this because his father is in a whole nother stratosphere of superstar than Phil Simms. Let's get serious here, okay? Because King Kong ain't got nothing on him. Okay? I did recognize that early on. I was Phil's son. I wasn't even Chris until I started to make
every
a name.
Game, that pressure was like.
Well, I didn't look at it as pressure. I almost looked at it as a chance to show off.
There you go.
Because I knew I was good. And I was these people want to come here see what Phil Simms' son got. I'm going to show them what I got.
That's exactly how
it's done. 7 3-pointers later, eat that crap.
Absolutely. No
so,
doubt.
Yeah, you were able to embrace it. That's where I was kind of going with it.
Yeah, well, I sort of used it as this sort of rebellious quest of independence. You know what I mean? And I was like to your point of I'll show you.
Yeah.
You know, my father can't help me on the field. In fact, it would hurt me. They would be more motivated to try to hurt
his
son. So yeah.
Your dad's movie sucked.
Right.
Actually,
no, believe it or not, they would compliment
they
the
would
movie.
Be. So, and tell you suck.
I'm still got to kill you, but Trinity, that's my movie.
That's awesome.
Crazy. Just got a first down. What are you doing?
That's awesome.
So, so it was a great motivator. I think it's what got me over playing with broken ribs, torn meniscus, clavicle.
Damn.
Couple of concussions. So that motivation to be like my own man and making it on my own was... that was a part of that fueled it.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Yeah.
You did. You were undrafted the free agent with the Rams. Yeah. You played with the Rhine Fire.
Oh, like, yeah,
I loved NFL Europe.
I loved it too,
mainly,
man,
because when I would play Madden, there were you these six that? Other teams. The other,
you remember? Yo,
yes.
I don't want to date ourselves, but like, yeah, that was like, because the it, worst Madden thing 95, is, what year was that? 95?
I don't know. I think
somewhere
I
in that, there.
It was like that. Yeah, I remember it on Sega Genesis.
The worst thing I'm talking about, even on like the lower, like the early 2000s, the worst thing would be when you'd randomize the teams and they would get Packers and you'd get like the Frankfurt, whatever.
Yeah, Frankfurt Galaxy.
So what was the NFL Europe like?
Alles klar. It was a great learning experience, both socially and as far as the game was concerned. They loved us out there.
Really?
Yeah. We had good times. Good, clean family fun.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Because your eyes only got like an inch or two wider when you said socially.
Yeah, social. Well, and
because
this
is what I've always heard.
Food.
Yes.
That means the culture, concerts.
I get you.
Concerts. Wiener schnitzels.
But that's where you had a lot of fun, though. Because I've heard that from a lot of like ex-players and stuff. That, you know, yeah, playing there was great, getting that experience. But being able to live there.
Some guys didn't go back.
Right. They just stayed.
Some guys stayed there, started a family.
Right.
Dude, I read about this guy that they flew him out to Italy, and he was like the only NFL player that went to Italy, and he was just a legend. He's like, why would I leave? Like, my family's in Italy. We always hear about NBA players going abroad, that was...
I would like to see like the NFL expand again internationally and get these supplemental leagues going over there and raise the awareness of the nature of the game and the purity of it.
Yeah.
And you can start that foundationally out there, I think, with a whole new audience.
All right,
I just want real quick, German fans, they're like organized chaos, right? Like, just like soccer, their football.
Right.
They stand. There was a section that stood up the whole game and chanted in unison. It was great.
Yeah.
You know? Damn.
Yeah.
Do you have any good Rhine Fire stories for me? Like craziness? Like
none that I can share with y'all.
And I don't even need it to be the party one. More like, you know how like there's a team and it's coming together and it's like kind of haphazard. Like, what was it? Organized chaos?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we would meet. We lived in the hotels. We met in the hotels. That was where the meetings were. We'd at the conference rooms or whatever. Yeah. So that was our lives, the hotels. But we had a lot of time off, too. They were like, well, we got the meetings done. See you later. See you tomorrow.
Damn.
So, you know, there was a lot of freedom to get in trouble.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's not like the NFL. No.
But that's what you do. You get the free time, that's where the young players always struggle because they're like, man, in college I had to go do study hall and all that stuff. Right.
More money and more time.
Exactly, which is a dangerous combination when you're 23 and 24 years old. All right, I mean, of course, sports was your love, but you always kind of kept, like, acting in the back of your mind, knowing... I didn't realize that was you and Malcolm X as a little boy.
Appreciate that, man.
I did not realize that. That's unbelievable.
I was 6 years old, man.
Yeah.
But like I said before, too, this positive rebellion, so that meant I had to sort of... bury my true passion and love, which was acting.
Yeah.
You know, I saw my father do Shakespeare in the Park when I was 4 years old, and I loved it then. And in the movie Glory, I knew every line of every actor in that movie, and that's what I wanted to do. But in his ascension in the business, he was starting to get more popular, more recognized, and sort of this getting put on this sort of pedestal.
When did it go to the next level in your in your life? Where
in
you
the
were
house,
like,
yeah.
Honestly,
is it like Philadelphia? When is it? When does it go next level
like
for your dad?
Shout out to Spike Lee. I mean, Malcolm X sort of changed our life.
That changed your life.
I mean, security was necessary. There were some death threats going on. So,
right.
But even how I was getting treated, like I would. So some of that resentment and anxiety I got from different treatment from other people, I sort of funneled that and used it as gasoline or fuel, I should say, into football. But the whole time I was bearing what I really wanted to do. But my parents are like artists. Like, my mom went to Juilliard, a classically trained pianist, taught lessons at 11 years old, 12 years old. So they were all about process,
right?
The art of it, the craft, the arts and crafts of it all, you know. And that's what I fell in love with, not the result. I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be famous or anything, but that's not what we were about.
Yeah,
that's not what they were about. And so that kind of shifted when the popularity started happening,
right.
Started raising.
Damn. So this movie, Black Klansman, you are Ron Stallworth, the first black detective in the history of the Colorado Springs Police Department, who outwitted David Duke with only a high school diploma. you're reading this character. Did you fall in love with it right away?
Yeah. Tell us like the backdrop of the story a little bit, just for the people listening and everything.
Sure. I got a text. I was on location doing another film in Cincinnati. Shout out to Cincinnati, too. Great food. I got a text message from Spike Lee, like, yo, this Spike called me. I'm like, is this, I don't talk to Spike.
The real Spike Lee?
Yeah, like, but I got to investigate, like, just in case it is. So I go like, hello, yo, John. He calls me John. I'm like, my name is John Dave, but I ain't going to correct Spike.
Yeah.
John, so I got this black detective in Colorado. He talked like Rilla in Colorado Springs. Takes down the Klan. The Klan. Where you staying? I'm like, so I'm, in my head, I'm like, all right, that's the elevator person. I'm like, man, this is like Dave Chappelle, right? This is something. And he's like a real book. So he sends me the book. I read it. I call him back like just like on cloud nine. Like, yeah. I'm just over the, through the roof. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Are you serious right now? What are we doing? He's like, all right, bet. See you this summer. So that's how I got the job.
Damn.
And, you know, just a story like this, when it can only be told by Spike Lee with Jordan Peele as well producing. And it was just, I couldn't believe it. And so, like, the book is way more detailed than the movie, but the fact that this happened in our own backyard, it's an incredible, incredible true story.
I mean, I got to ask a few more, like, about Spike. I mean, Spike, I look at Spike and almost think, like, okay, well, we talk about Bill Belichick and all the great things he does in the world of football and how he goes along his process. What was it like? What's Spike Lee as the coach of a movie?
Right.
Is he like hypercritical? Is he cool? Does he let you find your own way? What's his process?
Sort of all of the above. Like, you'll catch some heat. Somebody will catch heat on set one day.
Yeah.
But you got to get over it. You know, you gotta have thick skin because it's all in service of the film. It's about the team concept. Never have I been on a set quite like this where everybody wanted to be there, wanted to be there in service of film to the best of their abilities. And the freedom I had. I mean, he trusted me, this legend, right?
Yeah.
Trusted me with this material, meaning I didn't really get any notes. Like, you know, we do blocking stuff and positioning and camera stuff, a couple of adjustments. He would cut down what he didn't like, but he told me to trust your instincts, John David, trust your instincts. You got this. It was great. So this legend yelling action and cut, trusting me with the information with this project. It was such a liberating experience because it's not always like that on set. Sometimes it got you in a box.
Yeah. So yeah. And expound on that. Expound? Is that the word? Expand? Just expand?
I feel like
I make up words. You got to watch out. But no. But
elaborate.
But yeah. Well, yeah. I guess like when you say freedom too. I mean, okay. So you got your lines to the movie, and he basically just says he doesn't hold you to the letter of the law of every line. Right. Does he just let you kind of? Right.
I mean, there was so much ad-libbing going on. I think he's a master at recognizing energy and momentum,
right?
Like a lot of these great coaches, sometimes when Phil doesn't call a timeout, let them figure it out.
Yeah,
right. You know, like that's you got to have confidence in your system and yourself, and then the people that you brought on the team.
Right.
So his confidence is in, oh, I know who I know. I picked the right guy. Topher, he's the right guy. Adam, he's the right guy. Laura's the right woman. So that's where the confidence is. So he lets you do your thing.
Right.
Now, we had discussions, and if we go way left, we'll bring it back.
Right.
But I never heard him once say, "Can you try this way? Can you be funnier? Can you be..." Those generic notes sometimes are very frustrating as an artist because of that word.
Yeah, generic. It's very generic. Yeah.
But like in this case, with this story too, I mean, when he gave me that kind of trust, it just... the confidence was just soaring through the roof.
That's awesome.
So it was, you know, it was just a very fluid experience.
Expound does play.
It does play there.
Express in a lot of detail.
Okay, just good. Like, I wasn't sure.
We have one. I've been told to use it less.
Oh,
damn. So you go through, and what's interesting is I've now heard your father speak numerous times about his disdain for social media. And it's funny because you were talking before about how they're artists, and now I hear you speaking about the craft. And I think it's very funny that a lot of people in our society look past the craft and they look at the celebration and they go, I want the celebration, but they don't see the process.
Yeah.
And part of the reason we love Bill Belichick and you know, a lot of the great coaches in the NFL is it's all about the process. And then when the celebration happens, they go, this is a result of that. Right. But a lot of people just want to lift the trophy. Are those worlds similar? Have you been able to bring football into acting?
Absolutely. I mean, preparation, sometimes superstition, you know, like same clothes, the same song, you know.
So if you had a great acting day, you're wearing the same underwear the next day?
Not that. Okay. But I'm definitely going to keep my uncle's car wash bracelet on me always.
Nice.
Like, all right. Yeah, this, so it's
dealing with criticism, I'm sure that's where football helps, right?
Yeah, you must be great at that.
Well, like, listen, I would run for 242 and a touchdown or two touchdowns, and as Denzel's son ran for it.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
What I mean?
Damn.
Denzel's son makes the NFL. Denzel's son makes the All-Star game.
Yes.
So, that kind of criticism or that kind of critiquing, I'm just...
I'm impervious
to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Black Klansman, you are on set. You said that Spike Lee gives everybody one. When was the day that he gave it to you?
I think the I think it was the second. It was the fourth day.
Okay.
But he did it in not a way you would expect. So it was. I was kind of nervous that day. We had already been shooting a week, but it was like it was the most lines I've said from the script that day. So I was a little nervous. So we do it a couple times. He walks over, and he's not looking at me. He's like if you're me, I'm Spike. He's like this. So we're gonna bring the camera this way. You're gonna walk over and say it. Put some bass in your voice. I was like, yo.
Say it with your chest.
Yeah, right. Like, yo, say, like, put some. I love that. And I cracked up and I was off to the races, man. That was dope. So that's my version of like handing it to me. Cause like,
right.
like man up a little bit. Like, he could tell. Again, he just understands.
And he didn't even look
energy.
At you. Either.
He didn't even. That's the cold part. Yeah. He didn't even look. It was great, though. Again, that Phil Jackson,
yes.
You know, Jedi mind trick. Yes. I was like, oh, yeah, right. Let me get my stuff together. And it was great.
Yeah, cause it's not about coming at you. It's about bringing the best out of you.
Right. Well, he just knowing how to communicate with your personnel. Now, some people do need to just that kick, and you know, you gotta yell at them. Others, you need to, you know, talk to them the way you talk to them.
So. Damn.
I want to hear. Spike. Yeah, I want to hear this. What more about the movie itself, too?
So you want to know the concept?
Yeah,
the basic
concept, just to hear it, because like I've seen a few commercials here and there, and I know the basic, but I want to hear
your voice.
Yeah, I want to hear
that,
your. Yeah. I want
to
hear you now.
Well, he doesn't. Okay, right. He doesn't. Ron never changed his voice. So if he was sitting here talking to you, that's how he was talking to the Klansmen,
right?
Which makes them even more
like, how dare you be so civilized and calm?
Right, exactly. I mean, David Duke talked about like black people say aura. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff in the film that you'll have to see, but just diction and cadence like is dictated by the white man. It's good old-fashioned American hate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how we see how organized it is in the forms of these organizations of the Ku Klux Klan and seeing how generational it is.
We're seeing it right now.
Well, he ties that all into the film as well. I mean, the Klan has had resurgences. They from Birth of a Nation, which played in the White House.
Yeah.
Then David Duke putting this nice neighborly white man who speaks, you know, these racial slurs.
Right.
So, and then
Charlottesville, Virginia.
All that's incorporated in the film. Now, he's not hitting you over the head, though, with messages. Like, messages!
Yeah,
it's package and delivery is one of an entertainment capacity. It's something you can enjoy. You're almost reluctant or apprehensive to laugh. Like, I don't even know why I'm laughing at that. But you're laughing at how ridiculous it is in these performances that he's getting out of the actors. And the fact that the base, the backbone, the spine of this film is a true story.
Yeah.
We're standing on history here.
Right.
So it's such a unique film, one that I'm proud to be a part of. I watch a lot of films, and I must say, even if I wasn't in it, I'd be I'm going to see this.
Yeah,
and
I'm
the detective that kind of finds out all the inner workings of the Ku Klux
like
Klan.
The handshake, he was monitoring the Klan. That was the mission. It was a sting operation. Mm-hmm. So he started the operation over the phone, and he just started spitting these crazy racial slurs out. And Haight was like, oh, yeah, we like you. You speak in our language. I mean, what you're seeing in this film, I mean, with all the harsh language, it's purposeful. And you're seeing this lexicon of hate, you know, and it's sort of how, you know, some people speak French, bilingual. There's a Haight language. And it's really displayed in this film throughout. And you're seeing, again, how generational it is. Some of these trigger words are still being used today. And we're also seeing, like, how people feel and talk at their family barbecue, you know, at the local bowling alley.
Sure.
This is how people feel and think in this country for years.
Yep.
That's what I was thinking when you were talking about Spike just letting people ad-lib. That's the only way you really get natural speech.
I agree.
You know, because I think...
Or natural performance,
yes.
Too. I mean, when you got to do your prep work to earn that.
Of course.
But when you're in it, like, some of the best stuff you can't plan for. I mean, if I got an outside zone to the right and there's a 300-pound lineman that's in the way, I got to cut back. And that might be the touchdown. I'm not going to just run into the guy.
Right.
So a lot of times, again, talking about what I got from football,
you
got to be able to acquiesce. You got to be able to work with and just feel it out. And that environment must be created by your coach, that freedom to do that. Spike Lee afforded us that freedom in such a major way.
Did you see any acting chops thus far on Ballers? Have any of the NFL players impressed you with their abilities?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
you
let's
don't
see.
Have
Steven
to guess
Jackson
them.
In the pilot.
Sure.
He's talking about an elephant that he bought. Yeah, I got to go back. He talks about it, and that was ad-lib. That, again, Pete Berg, who directed the pilot? He did Friday Night Lights.
Right. Yeah, we had him here before.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. He's intense.
He's funny as hell.
Again, one of those coaches you love to play for.
Definitely.
I love Pete Berg, man.
Definitely.
He was just like shouting us to talk about your elephant you bought. And Steve was going with it. Steve Jackson was going with it. He was right there with us. It was great.
Yeah, Pete is the fucking man. We had a great time.
He was cool as hell. We could have hung with Pete and just had a good time.
Yeah.
Does your dad call when you're in the middle of the movie? Do you ever call, ask for, hey, Dad, I got this scene, blah, blah, blah? I mean, I know I wasn't above that. Yeah. As far as when I was playing, or he might call me and be like, Christopher, that Julius Peppers is big. Make sure you step up in the pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. He talked about working with Spike and his experiences, but I've been listening to his stories for years anyway, even before this.
Right.
And love when he talks about, sometimes he says the same story and the kind of alternate versions. But But you said 78, now it's 82. Getting the date wrong or whatever. But yeah, I ask him all the time. My mom, too, though, because she remembers. Well, I remember Denzel when it, so it's just getting that wealth of information.
All right, and last one for me, because I know you got a life and you have better things to do than the Sims and Lefko podcast.
It's a good time.
I am interested in this. I want to know what's your favorite movie of your dad's, and then what's the movie you believe he acted best in, which is like his best performance, and then what's your movie that you go, Dan?
What was Phil Simms' best performance?
Super Bowl 21. He was 22 of 25 for 269. Three TDs.
Oh, look at him.
88.1%.
You have no idea.
I can't do it. Like, I don't have it on command. I'm going to say virtuosity. No, I'm just kidding.
You had me going.
Virtuosity. No, I love...
There's so many good ones.
Crimson
I know.
Crimson Tide, Man on Fire.
Oh, man. Crimson Tide, he was coaching me. I was me, Sunshine. You didn't know that?
No. You're thinking of Remember the Titans.
Oh, I'm thinking of Remember the Titans. Crimson Tide was in the submarine, which I also saw as well. And I was a lefty Sunshine, like Sunshine, too.
That's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Did you get that? You got that a lot?
The night before we played Oklahoma at Texas, we went to see that movie.
Oh, right. Huh.
And the team started going, Sims! As soon as he started playing, that's Sims! So, yes, I did get that.
You were Sunshine. Yeah.
Sorry, I messed up that movie. I saw Crimson Tide as well.
Yeah, I mean, with he and Gene Hackman, that
put him in his place.
I mean,
yeah.
It was like Gene hit him like twice.
Yeah.
And pops, but like, you still look like, I don't know if I could pull that off. You could still look like a G after you got stolen on twice.
Right.
And he pulled that off. But I loved he and Tony Scott's chemistry. And
Man
I
love on Fire it. Was amazing.
I was one of those. I mean, I watch it every year.
Like Tony Scott had that run with like Domino and Man on Fire, where it was just the cuts and the flashbacks and how still, aggressive
that kind
it was.
Of that style of filmmaking is getting used today.
Yes.
He was ahead of his time, really. And he and Spike combination of Malcolm X is one of my. See, I can't.
It's hard.
It depends on what month.
I know. I hear you.
You know what I mean? This month right now is Malcolm X, but a month ago it was Man on Fire. A month before that was Crimson Tide. Month before that, it was Training Day. So,
Training Day is much probably ado about the most nothing. I love quoted that movie. What is your favorite movie of all time, Sims?
My favorite movie of all time is probably The Godfather 1 and 2.
Okay,
one and two.
I can almost count them as the same thing. Right, yeah, right. But yes, yeah. They were that is 1 and 2
Coming
for
to
me.
America is probably one of my favorites.
It's up there.
I can watch that. Always.
It's up there. Yeah.
Yep. Mine is Ace Ventura 2 and Nature Calls.
Nature, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
One when he's in the jungle.
That was the fake smile. Like, you're an idiot.
He's like a glove. He's an Eagles fan and he knows lines from Ace Ventura 2.
Oh, I got him ready.
Didn't he say like your glove in the one?
I think the problem is when you ask someone, damn.
Yeah, I think he did.
No, he makes it.
He parks in one and goes, like a glove.
But
he
says
it again.
Because the thing flips and it lands.
But he said it in one. That's where it started.
Damn.
Very good.
My thing, though, is when you ask someone what's your favorite movie, I always feel like they're trying to impress you. And they don't give the movie they want to watch the most. They give the one that's like been also critically acclaimed. They're like, oh, I love Dances with Wolves.
That's one of my favorites, too.
Dances with Wolves is great.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's my... Like, come on, man. Yeah.
So we do a thing during the season when we have to bet on games, and I've beaten him now for 4 years in a row, even though he played and is a professional. I'm a better gambler. And what happens is sometimes mascots come up. Okay. And we were doing the Bills, and he just kept going, Tatanka, Tatanka. And
guilty.
I had never seen it, and I was like, this guy's losing his mind.
Oh, yeah.
And then
the
when I saw it,
right.
It really is great. It's another movie that makes you hate white people.
Oh, yes.
Hate white people.
Yes.
It does. You're just like, you ruined everything. Just, they have a civilization, and they're not harming anybody.
Right.
And they're literally dancing with animals.
Yes, they are. They have intertribal wars. They were hurting each other.
Yeah.
But we didn't have to kick them out and exterminate them. I mean, that's where we went too far.
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah, I'm not siding with the...
Can't believe you, John David, deciding with just like westward expansion.
This Black Klansman thing is not real.
Breaking news. Spike, what were you thinking? This was fun. I had a good time.
Thank you.
You're a good dude.
Thank you.
You are a good dude.
How did you watch the Super Bowl?
Oh, how did I? So, I, like,
yeah, what was your setup?
So that whole, I watched it by myself because I was too emotional. I couldn't be with it. I couldn't interact with people. I was focused. And the whole playoff run, I never watched the first quarters. So
that, how did that happen? You just missed the first one. Like, now it's a trend.
Yeah, and then they were. I was like, you know what? Because I was a little nervous about
about
Nick Foles.
I was a little nervous. Foles. Yeah. My bad. We believe, bro. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So and then it worked.
He missed practice today.
Did he?
He's tight in the upper body, it says.
It's okay. It's
just like, oh, you got your screwed. It's over. He's in a great position right now. He's coming off the win, no pressure. He just hold the clipboard, chill. It might be time again.
I say play Foles the first 3 weeks of the year.
Whoa. I don't know about that.
Yeah, because here's the reason.
Why?
The reason that you keep Foles is so that we don't have to rush back Carson Wentz. Carson, you're at like 85. Guess what? We have Nick Foles. He'll be fine the first few weeks of the year. They're both men of God, and they both really respect each other. I don't think there's going to be any issue. Mm-hmm. And when Carson's ready, you bring him in. I think we have the rare opportunity to give him a longer runway. If he's 100%, let him play. But if you're kind of not sure about it, that's why you have Nick Foles. Like, I think this is a benefit, not a deterrent. All the TV shows are going to say, who do you play? Pick one. I say play both. Like,
given the history of this league, when has it ever worked, a dual quarterback?
Almost never. That's why I know what he's saying. I get you.
I get it.
You know, but they're just, you're, if he is close to playing Wentz, they almost have to play him. If you start out 3-0 with Foles, you might as well just try to trade Wentz and go with Foles in the future.
There are easy games, too. Like, right, they got the Bucs without Jameis.
Why would we bench Foles? We're 3-0. Yeah, right. And, you know, the coaches might be like, well, he was playing average, but, you know, the fans don't really know that because we won, and yet he's still going to have to play.
And you can sort of blame, even if he's not 100%, actually benefits the franchise. Like, they can blame, like, well, he still wasn't quite ready.
Right.
So they can play that angle, even if it's for mental purposes.
So Super Bowl, you watched by yourself?
Watched by myself. I didn't even eat. I was like, this is historic. Like, I grew up, we could never get past that hump. You know, never get over the hump. So I'm just getting like the Reggie White days and the Fred Barnett and just all these names were just in this history. I met Randall Cunningham. He gave me his glove. He told me I could be anything I want to be. I appreciate that, Randall, because I'm doing it.
Do you guys realize you both had a Randall moment?
I'm a huge Randall guy, too.
So you had a Randall moment at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, Randall was my guy. Well, every time my dad played him back in the late 80s, early 90s, he'd turn the corner and have a big run, or Carl Banks would knock him on the ground, and he'd stiff arm the ground and pop up. So he'd do this stuff, like you said, to start the interview, where I would go, damn, I've never seen quarterbacks do this shit. I've never seen anybody outrun Lawrence Taylor around the edge.
And what did he give you at the Pro Bowl?
So at the Pro Bowl, I was obsessed. It was a quarterback challenge.
Oh, yeah.
And I was obsessed with him.
Oh, yeah.
And he was so nice and cool. As hell.
And you're how old?
And I'm 11, and I was like, damn, Randall likes me. We're buddies. And I just started following him everywhere in the hotel. And like, everywhere. he couldn't get rid of me. He was like, get this fucking kid away from me.
Yeah, I would do the same thing.
But he couldn't have been better, and that was the year he got hurt, and everyone was like, you gotta change the way you play.
When
we left the quarterback challenge, I got home. It was right around that time. He sent me all this stuff, Randall, I'll be back running gear, hats, t-shirts, water bottles. Wow. Yeah, Randall's the man.
So you both were blessed by Randall.
He did not give me the glove. No.
Just saying, it was pregame, it was warming up, he gave me the glove.
My dad's Phil, your dad's Denzel, you win.
What do you mean? You in the league. Like, you had the whole...
I know.
You had the access. You were following him around the hotel. I didn't get none of that.
He didn't want none of that, I can tell you that.
That's awesome. John David, you're the man, dude. Congratulations on anything. Check out Black Klansman. It is going to be all over every movie theater, pretty much. And then also Ballers. It's now, what, the third season?
Fourth
season.
HBO, we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Man.
Dwayne.
We're family.
Yeah.
We're all under the same umbrella.
That's right. We just got... Yeah, Time Warner.
Yeah, we always were before AT&T. We were with HBO.
What's up, AT&T?
They couldn't check.
Yeah, they are.
Keep kicking ass.
Thank you. Thanks.
Appreciate you. All right.